You are now connected to the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty.
Taking on 2,000 years of indoctrination, 2 hours at a time.
Sink or swim, deep end information.
Asking questions no one else will.
Parabiblical research, spiritual technology, personal empowerment.
Be your own guru.
Master your own ascension.
Guide your own spirit.
And now, showing you how, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty.
Hello and welcome. I am Jeffrey Daugherty. You know me as a lot of things. Some people call me the Christian whistleblower. Glad to be here with you tonight. If you have questions in the chat room, go ahead and put them in all caps. Rocky said you might want to refresh the chat room because I'm not sure, but he says to do it. He's the guy that knows what's going on, so I thought I would pass that along to you. I think we got a great show tonight. I don't know how much you follow of my Twitter and my Facebook during the day, but tonight we're going to take a look at a thing. I mean, a lot of people take a look at the Matrix. A lot of people take a look at the control grid. A lot of people take a look at the things that are going on, but we're going to take a look at the very code of the Matrix tonight. We're going to discover, I believe, the thing that makes the Western paradigm of culture, control, guilt, and fear tick, the code of the Matrix tonight on the Christian Whistleblower Show with Jeffrey Daugherty. Welcome to everybody in the chat room. Always good to see a lot of folks here, happy and interested to see what you have to say. And if you do have questions, put them on capital letters and boom, I will answer them for you. Thanks to Cliff and Veronica for that introduction. And folks, we really do mean things we say in that introduction. We are asking questions that no one else will. You won't hear this stuff anywhere else. No one else has the experience. No one else has done the research. And no one else has the guts. And probably no one else has as little to lose as I do. And you know what they say about a man that has nothing to lose? He's dangerous. And that's why a lot of these apologists have called me the most dangerous guy around. And you know what? They're right. I am dangerous. I've got nothing to lose and nothing to do but get the facts out to you so you can pick and choose about what you want to do. Yeah, Rocky, you certainly could make yourself avail yourself of the services of Cliff, one of the great voices in radio in Southern Florida. That's Cliff Desmond. And Cliff has a good idea. And before I get started, I want to ask you folks to contact me at jeffreydaugherty.com, christianwhistleblower.com. Send me a message on Facebook or on Twitter at NC Kabbalah, Facebook Jeffrey Daugherty. Cliff actually brought up a question about churches and starting churches and having churches. And he kind of actually has started a church in the virtual world. I think it's called the First Church of the Elohim, Peace and Light, I think. But, you know, I've been talking for years, well, really months, about getting the Unindoctrinate Yourself tour rolling, where we go to the great sites, we go to the great cities, and we talk and we share. And I'm just wondering how many of you might think it would be a good idea to have a church, and perhaps, you know, I have ways of knowing from my website at least where we're getting a lot of support and feedback from. We could actually go to those places and spend, give me 3 or 4 weeks, I can start a church. That's what I used to do as a Pentecostal evangelist. Get someone to run it and just grow this thing so we're not just leaving people high and dry. It's one thing to be an evangelist, to blow in, blow up, and blow out. It's another thing to actually take care of people that you talk to. And Andy Toltec, Dr. Andy Toltec, has mentioned that to me a few times. In fact, he's taken me to task. He says you do a great job blowing up people's Christian religion because it's based on fear and guilt, but then you leave them high and dry with nothing. And Dr. Toltec, I know you think I ignore you most of the time, but very little of what you say is not taken very seriously by me. So let me know your thoughts and ideas about that, and we will go forward as we go forward. And let's take a look at Unindoctrinate Yourself, Unindoctrinate Daily. It's a collection of news items from around the net. It's Unindoctrinate Daily on the website. Of course, when we do it here once a week, guess what? It's Unindoctrinate Weekly. Catholic priest claims a 15-year-old teen wanted sexual contact. Yeah, I think we talked about that one last week. Hebrew Roots pastor Jim Staley found guilty of fraud gets 7-year prison sentence. You know what? There's not enough 7-year prison sentences being handed out for religious fraud in the United States of America. We need to crack down on this fraud. We need to crack down on all this. And Cliff Desmond posted something today on Facebook that I noticed talking about. He had a big picture of what looked like the American Idol set. He says, American Idol? No, it was actually a mega church. And you've got these churches literally that are raising billions of dollars. These churches that can give Donald Trump a run for net worth. These churches raising billions of dollars and not paying taxes on them. That in itself is a fraud, in my opinion. That in itself is worthy of prison sentence. And that in itself must stop. It must stop because there's no reason why religious organizations should be tax exempt. The NFL finally summoned up the testicular fortitude to forfeit their nonprofit status. And it doesn't make any more sense for churches to be nonprofit than it does for the NFL. And I probably shouldn't say this, but I had a person offer me quite a sum of money. You know, I'm talking about if I could get $10,000, I could get myself to $100,000. We could get this message out to everybody and bring down the guilt and fear and control matrix. Well, I had somebody offer a sizable amount of money to me and said, I'm celebrating on the inside, right, trying to be calm. But they say, what's your 501c3? 501c3 is your nonprofit status. I say, I don't have a 501c3. I won't have a 501c3 because here's a lesson, folks. Learn this well if you haven't learned it yet. The 501c3, the nonprofit status, is the government subsidizing religious organizations. And if you haven't figured this out yet, let me clue you in. Whatever the government subsidizes, sooner or later, it's going to regulate it. Whatever the government subsidizes, sooner or later, it will regulate. So I don't have a 501c3. I won't have a 501c3. And of course, I don't have $10,000 right now either that I could have otherwise, but that's okay. Because it's more important to have your integrity. It's more important to have your free moral agency. It's more important to be unspotted from this world like Yeshua said. Yeshua said that the man who's the friend of the world, the man who is involved with the systems of the world is the enemy of the divine. Anyway, we do have too much of this money in churches. I'm sorry, there's no reason why Franklin Graham needs $1 million a year salary. There's no reason why Joel Osteen needs to live in a $25 million house. It's stupid. It's wrong. And it needs to end. And if, Cliff, that rant was your fault, we put that one on you. Archaeologists discover a 4,000-year-old archaeological find linking Allah to Lucifer and to the harlot religion. We're going to talk about this a little bit later tonight. Allah, Yahweh, and the Lord God are all the same guy. They're all the same entity. Yeshua, you call him Jesus, I call him Yeshua. Yeshua identified that being as an adversary, the old translation, Satan, Lucifer, big time, controversial, spectacular, yes, but wrong translations. It's actually the adversary. Allah, the Lord God, all the same guy, according to Yeshua. So these things are starting to come out little by little, bit by bit. If you need some work, the Philippines need more exorcists. Help wanted. The Philippines need more exorcists. So if you are of a mind to go down to a place that's even more human than Florida, I've been there, and oh my goodness, the Philippines needs more exorcists. And here's the final story we're going to talk about. Hatred is weaponizing Jesus. How violent evangelicals, faith-based con artists, and serial abusers are using religion for the purpose of evil. I would submit to you that's a little bit redundant. I was religious for 20 years. I was a full-time Pentecostal evangelist with the largest Protestant denomination in the world, one of them. And the more I learn about spirituality, the more I realize that religion and spirituality are mutually exclusive. And that's not to throw rocks at you if you consider yourself a religious person. That's to help you rethink your paradigm, because religion is all about rules and regulations, do's and don'ts. Guarantee you, ask somebody what they believe. Somebody that goes to a regular church, well, what do you believe? Well, we don't believe in drinking. We don't believe in smoking. We don't smoke, drink, or chew, or hang out with those that do. No. Tell me what you do believe. See, religion's all about what you can't do, what you shouldn't do, who you shouldn't do, where you shouldn't go, what you shouldn't drink, what you shouldn't eat. Spirituality isn't about do's and don'ts and rights and wrongs. It's about development within yourself. So that's why I say religion and spirituality are mutually exclusive. And you can't be religious and spiritual, in my opinion. But we don't have to look very far to see how hatred is weaponizing Jesus. And Jesus, to be frank with you, is a weapon. I just finished a book that we're going to be talking about someday about this very thing, the weaponizing of Jesus, how Jesus is a character created to replace Yeshua and to be a placeholder for the Pauline religion. And then it morphed into the Lord Jesus, which allowed the Lord to kind of buddy up to this new Jesus paradigm so he could rehabilitate his Old Testament reputation. And then it just became to where the Lord has taken over the Jesus character, and he's going to use it in the future to fake a second coming, to fake a rapture. Yeah, we got a lot of stuff to talk about and a lot of things coming up. One thing that I found fascinating, and in fact, I wrote a little article about it. We're going to talk about that. I don't know if you saw the Alex Jones and David Duke debate. Wasn't really a debate. It was Alex Jones saying what he thought for a little bit, and David Duke saying what he thought for a little bit. And I got to tell you, folks, I met David Duke way back in the day when he started his political career. I was working for another politician and happened to be in an event where I met David Duke. Charming guy, smart guy, I mean, good-looking guy. And he was very well prepared for this interaction with Jones, and he really put Jones to shame. In fact, Alex Jones is doing everything he can to remove the replay of this talk they had. It's not on his site. He's, you know, trying to get rid of it on the internet because Duke really schooled him. And what happened was this, and I'm just going to kind of go through this article I wrote. It's very small. If you haven't seen the discussion debate between David Duke and Alex Jones on the Alex Jones Show, you should look it up on YouTube and give it a watch. You won't find it on Prison Planet or Alex Jones or I don't know his other websites, but you won't find it there. They've removed it. It was a truly fascinating discussion. Jones and Duke traded barbs about who and what they see as the true evil in the world, and it was very entertaining, and it also at the same time reminded me of the old story of the blind man and the elephant. I don't know if you remember that story as a kid. You got three blind guys, and they're put in a room with an elephant, and they're told, describe to us what an elephant is. Well, of course, you know, the one man grabs the trunk and describes the elephant as a great serpentine beast. Another blind man, you know, feels the side of the elephant and describes it like a great boulder. And the other blind man feels the tail, and he says, oh, the elephant is shaped like a rope. And of course, the moral of the story is that they're all right and they're all wrong. They've only got a piece of the truth. Now, I'm not exactly accusing Jones or Duke of blindness because I don't really know the men well enough to say that, but I am suggesting that at the very least, both of those men suffer from acute myopathy. They have a tunnel vision, and each of them is only seeing a part, just like the blind men in that story, and it's a part that they are mistaking or promoting through means of deception, and I'll leave that up to you to decide what you believe. They're promoting it as the whole. They only see a part. Their vision is acutely myopic. They only see a part, but they're blowing it up and portraying it as the very whole. to Dr. Duke, and he is a doctor, he's a doctorate in history, to Dr. Duke, the Jewish elite are the focus of all the evil in the world. Alex Jones laid the blame on other elites outside the Jewish realm, including the Catholics, who he mentioned by name. Now, stay with me as I talk about this. Both of them are right, and both of them are wrong. Duke and Jones are seeing in part. It's beyond debate that Jewish elites have great power and control in the leadership of the New World Order. Duke's right about that. It's also demonstrable that Catholic elites are right there with them, wielding power of their own in the ever-growing New World Order. What neither one of those men wanted to mention is that the Muslims are also playing a big made-to-order part in this play as a made-to-order opponent that's striking fear in both the Jewish and the Catholic elites. But there's an elephant in the room that neither man, whether it be out of ignorance, whether it be out of fear, or whether it be out of possible complicity, neither man would talk about this elephant in the room. The elephant in the room is the Lord. Capital L-O-R-D, Yahweh, Lord. That's right. The elephant is the Lord. And I just thought of the Republican Party implications of that. That's kind of funny. But a brief survey of sacred scriptures of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam in their historical context is enough to alert the objective researcher that the Lord is common to all of those faiths. He's the Yahweh of Judaism, he's the Lord God of Christianity, and he's the Allah of Islam. Basically, Christianity and Judaism are your Republican and Democratic parties built on the same thing, funded by the same people, based on the same things, but trying to convince you they're different. If you look at the teachings and the history of Islam, Christianity, and Judaism, I guarantee you that you will find at least as much commonality as you will difference. And this certainly explains a lot. In the Lord, we have all the disparate pieces brought together to expose the reality of the elephant. But Duke or Jones didn't have the guts to say it. And I would welcome Duke or Jones to come on this program, and I would certainly go on their programs. I've tried to get on Alex Jones's show. He won't let me on. I think he won't let me on because he's so deep into the traditional Christian thought that he thinks I'm an antichrist. I have two heads. I'm a green reptilian that lives underground. And he won't let me come on no matter what. I mean, he'll have David Duke on, but he won't have me on. And, you know, that's certainly interesting. I'm good enough for Coast to Coast, but not for Alex Jones. So you figure that out. I would certainly welcome an invitation by Dr. Duke as well to explain this. Because to be frank with you, my gut feeling is that they know, but they just won't say. Because they're interested in building their following, they're interested in raising their money, they're interested in doing, you know, they don't want to do like me and work a job to be able to fund their work. They want to be able to take the, and I guarantee you they both got 501c3s for what it's worth. I don't know that, but I'll bet the $10,000 that I turned down because I don't have one. But Duke identifies the Jewish element involved in our control and deception. Jones identifies the Catholic and other disparate elements, but both ignore the elephant. Neither's willing to identify the Lord as the central figure in the whole great play. Neither's willing to admit that our true captors, be they Jewish, be they Catholic, be they Protestant, our true captors are all exponents of Abrahamic religion. If you didn't know it, Judaism, Christianity, Catholicism, Islam are all Abrahamic religions. There's more or at least as much commonality as there is difference in those four religions. My question to Messieurs Jones and Duke, did you not identify the Lord because you're unaware? Or because you are unwilling? And again, I'll be extending an invitation to either or both men. And of course, will make myself available to be on their shows. On that note, in a couple of days, I'm going to be on the Church of Mabus radio show. Look on my website, and you can find out the information on that. And then the next week, I'm on the Just Energy radio. So just a couple promos there. But left to the rest of us, forgetting about what Jones thinks, forgetting about what Duke thinks, left to the rest of us is to answer the question of what each of us will individually do with the elephant that's in the room that's now been exposed. Will you continue to ignore the elephant? Or will you confront the elephant? It's there now for all of you to see. It's there now for every one of you to see. And I guess that's really what I do. I expose the elephant. I point out the elephant. I'm kind of like the little kid that says, look, the emperor's naked, when everybody else wants to pretend that he's clothed. I'm kind of the guy that says, look, there's the elephant. And the elephant's not going away, and neither am I. And the question that I have for you is, what you going to do now that the elephant has broken out all over you, my brother, my sister? What are you going to do with the elephant in the room that can no longer be hidden? So, there you have it. Interesting stuff, interesting things to ponder. If you have any questions, put them in capital letters, put them in the chat room, and we will discuss them. So, looking tonight at our subject, which is the NTLIE, or the New Testament lie. And the reason why this is so important, folks, and the reason why I get so excited talking about this, we'll give us a little introduction before we go to break, is because this literally is the code of the Matrix. This is the one string that if you pull it, the whole thing unravels. This is really the foundation, the founding stone of the Matrix. And when I talk about the Matrix, I'm not talking about Neo. I really am, but you know, I'm talking about the fear and guilt-based control matrix constructed by the Apostle Paul when he co-opted the message of Yeshua in the first century and created what is now Roman Catholicism and Roman Protestantism. And the NTLIE, or the New Testament lie, is the code of the Matrix. On my website, jeffreydarty.com, I want to say this before I forget, because you know how I get wound up and I forget to say what I'm supposed to say, but we've just put together a combo of the Diamond New Testament, which is the only New Testament presented in the proper chronological order, and the NTLIE ebooks, both of them together. And if you read the Diamond New Testament, and if you read the NTLIE, you will understand the code behind the Matrix. You will understand what makes this go, and the programming will no longer have any effect on you. So it's jeffreydarty.com, christianwhistleblower.com. Click on the shop or the bookstore, and you can see the combo pack. Those are also available individually, but I recommend you get the combo pack. And the most important thing, and I think some of you in the chat room have read at least the Diamond New Testament. I welcome you to put your reviews of it in the chat room. You know, I'm not afraid of what you have to say, so put it out there. And basically, the Diamond New Testament is written on the premise of the Thomas Jefferson statement that the New Testament is really a field of dung with a few diamonds scattered amongst them. Dung being the mistranslations and the falsehoods perpetrated by religion, and dung and diamonds being the real truths of Jesus. Thomas Jefferson, sorry, I had to sneak a drink. Thomas Jefferson actually taught that the Apostle Paul, the self-appointed Apostle Paul, was the first great deceiver, the first great Antichrist in the world. And that was covered in my book, Apostle Paul Antichrist, which is also on the website, but enough self-promotion. But anyway, the New Testament, the Diamond New Testament removes Paul. The Diamond New Testament restores the name of Yeshua. And the Diamond New Testament removes all of the dung. I'm in about my third or fourth iteration of it because I keep finding more dung as I go through. But the idea is to shovel away the dung and leave just the diamond. So that's what the diamond New Testament is. The NTLIE, or the New Testament lie, is what we're going through now, and it takes things down into a deeper level. And just by way of introduction, it's important that we understand, and these things we don't understand, not because we're stupid, but because we're ignorant. And ignorant means you don't have the knowledge. You don't become stupid until the knowledge is available and you choose to ignore it. Then you become stupid. So I'm talking to the ignorant tonight, and I know some of the stupid still sneak in, and that's okay, because there is redemption for the stupid. There is salvation for the stupid. Can I get an amen? Because the stupid can decide to learn, because stupidity is really a choice. Stupidity is, I know the information's out there, I don't want to address it, I don't want to believe it, so I'm just going to ignore it. I was stupid for about 20 years. I was stupid because I was involved in big-time religion. I was making a six-figure salary, preaching the gospel, flying first class, you know, wearing Brooks Brothers and Gucci and enjoying the high life. But I had to finally realize, you know what? I'm a liar. I'm a fraud. I am a charlatan. And I know that Joel Osteen knows he is. I know that Franklin Graham knows he is. And I know I could name 100 of them, including that idiot Creflo Dollar with his new jet. They know they're charlatans. They know that they are not preaching truth. They know that they're hiding truth, but yet they can't leave the money. And of course, they convince themselves like I did, oh, I'm really helping people, so it's not that bad. Oh, I'm better than a drug dealer. Well, congratulations, Creflo Dollar. You're better than a drug dealer. Congratulations to you. But the New Testament, my friends, is not a single book written by a single author. I know it's presented that way, and I know our enculturation causes us to believe that, but the New Testament's actually 27 books written by 8 different authors between the years of 47 and 100 AD. And they weren't even really books the way we think about books. They were actually letters. It's like I sit down and write Cliff Desmond a letter. Or I sit down and write Rocky, how do I forget Rocky's last name, Stucci a letter. I sit down and write Scotty Roberts a letter. I write Dr. Annie Toltec a letter. They were just letters. And they weren't assembled into the form we're familiar with today until a dude named Polycarp, that was really his name, Polycarp compiled it and published them sometime before AD 160, sometime around 160 AD or so. So up until 160 AD, which was, you know, 80 years at least after Yeshua was gone, 70 years or 60 years at the most, or at least after all of the apostles were gone. Most of the apostles were gone by AD 70, AD 80. John lived until about AD 100. So the New Testament, as we know it, never existed during the time of Yeshua, never existed during the time of the 12 apostles, never existed during the time of the self-appointed apostle Paul, never existed until sometime around 160 AD, and that's verified by a book called Who Published the New Testament by David Trobisch. So I'm not just making stuff up here. And we're going to talk about this compilation. We're going to talk about how this was put together, and we're going to talk about how it's the code to the matrix, because it's been so incredibly mismanaged, jumbled and rearranged in order to hide the original message and to feed us a line of crap, dung, that's a technical term. And we'll start talking about this right after the break. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, the Christian Whistleblower, BRB.
IBN, the intrepid paradigm broadcast platform.
IPBN is an alternative radio network of elected programs and hosts hailing from varied schools of thought, academic and entertainment backgrounds, and traditional to esoteric beliefs. From science, history, archaeology, to spirituality, paranormal, politics, metaphysics, and so much more. You can also download the IPBN app at your iTunes and Android store by searching Intrepid Paradigm. And listen to 24/7 streaming on the IPBN Alternative Radio Network. For more information and to listen to past shows, go to www.ipbn-fm.com and follow us on Twitter at IPBN_FM.
It's not about anything else.
Go to your room and lock the door. Cause when you try it once, you want to try it some more. Size doesn't matter, and that's a fact. It might be small, but it's a big impact. Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of corn nuts and bust a nut. They're lightly toasted and hard as well. Enjoy yourself, we won't tell. Everybody does it, they like it a lot. Just don't get caught. It takes a few minutes if you don't delay. Take your time, make your last all day.
Bust a nut, bust a nut. Grab a bag of cold nuts and bust a nut. They're lightly toasted and hard as well.
Enjoy yourself, we won't tell.
Corn nuts, an intensely crunchy corn snack, comes in 7 nut-busting flavors. Bust a nut at a convenience store near you.
Out of Jeddah in the M&M Survivor Challenge, the sun beats down on the empty quarter.
Hold on, Red. I need a drink. That's better.
Hey, Yellow, go easy with that water. It's got to last till Dubai.
Okay, Red. I'll be careful.
Guess how many weeks it will take Red and Yellow to cross the empty quarter desert from Jeddah to Dubai and win great M&M survival kits with laptop, mobile phone, and GPS tracking system and lots more. Count the colors inside M&M's packs for a clue.
Yellow, you crazy nut. The water, it's all gone.
Ow, you don't have to hit me.
We'll never make it now.
Are you looking for a really awesome and amazing graphic designer? How about an illustrator or a photographer? This is Rainey Roberts, and I wanted to tell you how you can get my designer, illustrator husband, Scotty Roberts, to work for you on your project. Do you have an awesome self-published book but no cover, or even worse, a cover that really sucks? Do you need a kick-ass logo for your company or some f***ing awesome graphic designs for your ads or website? Then get in touch with my husband for the best f***ing awesome kick-ass design and illustration. He knows his stuff, and he's been at this for more years than I've been alive. Go to scottallenroberts.com. That's Scott with 2 T's, ALANROBERTS.com to take a look at his online portfolio of work, or call 651-468-8115. Now go out and kick some ass with some kick-ass graphic design.
Hire my dad, so he can take me to Disneyland.
To the largest spiritual network on the planet, the Jeffrey Daugherty Show.
And before you start yelling at me about how could it be the largest spiritual network on the planet, we're referring there specifically to our Twitter account. We have over 130,000 followers on Twitter and room for more. So join us on Twitter, follow us on Twitter, Facebook, all that good stuff. And I just noticed during the break that Cliff was talking about he was in the flatulent path of an elephant once, felt so violated it parted his hair. You know, Cliff was in the place very, very similar to a place I was in. I don't know how much of his business he once spread about, but he was involved in one of the largest Christian broadcast networks on the planet. And of course, I was involved as an Assemblies of God evangelist, and I preached over and over on that network and for that network. And the leader, this is how bad it is in evangelical Christianity. The leader of another network, not the network that Cliff was on, but the leader of another network actually hit on me. He was a man, and he actually hit on me sexually when I was preaching for him, I went to his place to preach. If I called it, you'd know who it was, but he's still alive, and I don't really want to get into all that. But I was supposed to preach for a week. I think I was supposed to make $1,500. Tuesday night, he hit on me, and I told him, that's not going to happen, and what you're going to do is sit down right now and write me my $1,500 check, and I'm leaving. And I did, because I wasn't about to sleep with him and his wife. I was married, and, you know, it just was kind of icky. Cliff was affiliated with TBN. That was from another network that was three letters. Three letters that started with a P. So there you go. Figure that out. But anyway, that's why I'm not just up here ranting and raving because I don't like Christianity. And I get these things. Oh, your wife left you for your piano player, so you're just mad at Christianity, and that's why you're doing this. The fact of the matter is, yes, my wife did leave me, and shock, I might not have been the best of husbands. So, I mean, hey, she did what she thought she had to do. She left, but I was a preacher and an evangelist for another 5 or 6 years, not with the assemblies, because you could have been convicted of murder, you could have snorted cocaine, shot heroin, and took PCP, but if you're divorced, you can't be a preacher. Only if you're divorced or if you're gay are you done. But anyway, that's another rant. But for another 5-6 years, well, maybe it was only 3 or 4 years, but anyway, for another extended period of time, I continued to preach with another group, an independent group. So it had nothing to do with the fact that my wife decided to leave me because I was a rotten husband. It had to do with the fact that I finally got tired of living the lie. And part of the lie is the New Testament lie, the NTLIE, and what we need to realize and understand is that the New Testament is a compilation of books that were written over a period of, what was it, 47, about 50 years, let's say 60 years, to be generous. And it's a compilation of books. We know when these books were written. And if you're putting a compilation of books together, and you know when they're written, if you're honest, if you're sincere, if you're trying to help people understand what the books mean, you put them together in order. First books first, last books last. That's important because it shows the flow of thought and doctrine over those 50 years. You put the first books, the second books, the third books, and that's the way the people received them. You got to keep that in mind. The first book those people received, they received from the apostles, and they're like, oh, this is from the apostles. I'm going to read this thing. They got another book. And you know that that second book had to line up with what was in that first book for them to really accept it. I mean, if Rocky Stucci writes me a letter that says something, and then he writes me another letter afterwards that says something the opposite, I'm going to say, yo, Rocky, what the hell? You said this, but it contradicts what you said before. So, see, it's about continuancy, that's not the right word I'm looking for, but it's about knowing when they were published and comparing the earlier ones with the later ones. That just makes sense. It's a compilation of books, and every single compilation, every other compilation of books in the history of books, every compilation of books in the history of writing, every other compilation of historical books ever written has been compiled logically, reasonably, with the books arranged in the correct chronological order. It just makes sense. Why would you do it any other way? You wouldn't unless you had a nefarious agenda. The first book written is the first book. The second book's the second book. The third book's the third book. On and on and on to number 27, right? The oldest books are first, the newest books are last, so that the readers can understand the flow and the development of ideas in their proper historical context. You would never, ever scramble the order of the books because you'd scramble the entire development of thought. It wouldn't make any sense anymore. Unless, you would never do that unless you were intentionally trying to disrupt the understanding, unless you were intentionally trying to disrupt the historical development, unless you were intentionally trying to scramble the ideas or replace the actual historical timeline of thought with a false one. Ladies and gentlemen, 8:40 p.m. Eastern Time, August 26, 2015. If you haven't heard it before, hear it now. The New Testament, as you know it, is a lie. And I love the New Testament. I believe it contains the words of God. I believe it contains the words of Yeshua. I believe that it has much great teaching that will help us along our spiritual path. I believe it contains the ways, the truths of Yeshua that lead to an abundant life. But the New Testament in its present form is a lie. The New Testament in its present form is 90% dung, maybe 80% dung, 20% diamond. I know a lot of you are shocked by that. You're shocked to learn that the New Testament, as we know it today, is a lie. And not only a lie, but a damn lie, as we used to say here in the South. It was one thing to lie, but to tell a damn lie, that's even worse. The order of the books in the New Testament is totally, completely scrambled. Yes, it's true. Look it up on the internet, and I'm going to give you facts and figures here. They're not compiled in the order in which they were written. The oldest is not first. The newest are not last. What's the first book in the New Testament? The choir yells out, Matthew! That is the first book in the New Testament as we have it today. The book of Matthew was written in 66 AD. It's the first book in the New Testament. Take a guess what book it is in the order of the original chronological order that they were written. First book in the New Testament, number 11 in the chronological order. Number 1 is number 11. What's the second book in the New Testament? Mark, everybody says. Mark was written in 57 AD. Mark was the fifth book in chronological order. What's the next book? Luke, everybody says. Luke was written in 63 AD. That would make it the ninth book written. What's the fourth book? John, everybody says. It was written in 85 AD. That makes it the 13th book chronologically. I've been saying this for about a year at least, and I've never had one person answer this at all. Where's all my apologists? Where's all my preachers, my priests, my pastors? Where's all the experts? Why in the world have we been sold the idea that 11, 5, 9, 13 is really 1, 2, 3, 4? Why have we been sold the idea that 11, 5, 9, 13 is really 1, 2, 3, 4? What's going on here? What's going on here? Why are we being sold this idea? Who can explain this? It's crazy. And it doesn't just end with the first four books. I hate to be dry, but let me give you the true order of the books real fast. James, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, 1st and 2nd Corinthians, Galatians, Mark, Romans, 1st Peter, Philemon, Philippians, Colossians, Luke, Acts, Jude, Matthew, 2 Peter, 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy, Titus, Hebrews, John, 1st, 2nd, 3rd John, and Revelation. That's the real order. From 47 through 96, when Revelation was written. And yet, the new order has it, the 11th book, the 5th book, the 9th book, the 13th book, the 10th book, the 6th book, the 4th book, the 8th book, the 2nd book, the 3rd book, the 12th book, the 8th book, the 1st book, the 7th book, the 11th book, the 14th book, and then the 15th book. Some of those have multiple books as they were written in the same year, but look at that hodgepodge and give me a rational explanation. Look at that jumble and give me a rational explanation. What scholarly, historical, or linguistic reason could there possibly be for the complete and total scrambling of a compilation of books whose chronological dates of order are readily known? It's not like we don't know when these things were written. We know exactly when they were written with such a great enunciation there. We know when they were written. We know when the dudes wrote them. So why are they scrambled? The only way to discover what seems to defy explanation is really to look at the end results. Look at what was produced. And if we see the end result, we can kind of reverse engineer and find the motive based upon the ends that are reached. In effect, we've got to start with the results generated by the finished product and work our way backwards in an attempt to understand the motivations of the compiler. And, you know, this is interesting. You think about the New Testament and, you know, 27 books, and you think about a committee sitting down and weighing the good, the bad, the ugly. You think about a committee of learned men deciding what's going to go where. Folks, it wasn't that way. It was one dude that did this deed. One dude named Polycarp. One dude sat down and decided how the New Testament was going to be put together. I don't know if he put a bunch of numbers. Maybe he did like Joseph Smith. He stuck his head in a bag and just randomly wrote down numbers. I don't know if they had dartboards in the first century. Maybe he just threw darts at a board and whatever number hit was the one he did. One thing's for sure. He didn't do it in the chronological order, and he didn't do it in the way that it should have been done. But here's an interesting fact, folks. An interesting tidbit that will give you some indication as to what was going on here. All of the books written by the apostles are completely jumbled. I'm talking about the apostles of Yeshua, the original 12 apostles. But amazingly, all the books by the apostles are in jumbled order. But amazingly, the books written by the Apostle Paul are presented in their chronological order. Huh. How about that? You like apples? How about them apples? All the apostles' books jumbled, scrambled, impossible to understand what was going on from a development of thought and doctrine. But somehow, the books of the Apostle Paul, in perfect order. You can understand Paul's development of thought. You can understand Paul's development of doctrine. You can understand the books that Paul wrote as the people that received them understood them. Why do they allow us to easily understand the development of the doctrine of Paul, but they prevent us from easily understanding the development of the doctrine of the apostles? Folks, something stinks. There's an elephant in the room, and I think it just relieved itself. And if you've ever been to the circus and smelled that, you can imagine what it smells like when you're in the room with an elephant and the elephant's dropping dung. And here we are trying to fish through the dung to find the diamonds. Aren't you glad that I do that for you and you don't have to dig through the dung yourself? But one thing is glaringly certain, folks, right from the beginning. The compilation of the New Testament by Polycarp, one dude with a funny name, the compilation of the New Testament was not designed or carried out to give us the best historical perspective of the development of thought and doctrine of the entire first century. This sobering revelation should tick you off. This sobering revelation should anger you. Why have you been lied to for 2,000 years? I know you haven't been around for 2,000, but you get what I'm saying. Maybe a better question is, why have we allowed ourselves to be lied to for 2,000 years? Well, why have we been ignorant for 2,000 years? And really, the question is, upon learning of your ignorance, are you going to compound that by allowing it to continue into stupidity? Okay, you've been ignorant. You've had no way to read the New Testament in its proper chronological order because it's never existed. Of course, the Diamond New Testament does now, but that, you know, you may not want to buy my book. I understand that. Go on the internet and look up the books in the order they were written. You can find it. That's how I found it. Research. I know it means you got to put down the remote. I know it means you got to turn off the PlayStation or the Xbox. I know it means you got to quit watching American Idol or whatever and do some research. But you can find out, or you can just buy the Diamond New Testament. It makes it a lot simpler and easier. But anyway, it should tick you off that you've been lied to. It should tick you off that you've been ignorant. And hopefully it'll tick you off enough to decide, I've been ignorant, but I'm not going to be stupid. That's up to you. I can lead a man to water, but I can lead a man to truth, but I can't make him think. I can lead a lady to truth, but I can't make her think. So all I can do is bring the facts, and you have to decide what to do with the facts. But this revelation should shock you. It should anger you. And let's look at what is produced by the present compilation and see if we can't find out what the hell's going on. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty. This is the Christian Whistleblower. We're talking about the NTLIE. And the present compilation of the New Testament is really a convenient lie. It gives us a neat, pretty, convenient lie. What we have first, it's very nice and orderly. What we have first are the Gospels. We have the four Gospels. They're very nicely set up in a very tidy little order that groups all the stories about the life of Jesus, into one little grouping. It's very nice. You can see the unicorns running in the meadows underneath the rainbows. And it's just nice. There's four Gospels. All we want to know about Jesus, all we want to know about those guys that are hanging out with them, it's right there. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Just read it. Very nice. And next, we have more unicorns and rainbows with a nice grouping of books. It talks about the ministry of the apostles after the crucifixion and the rise of the great and lofty Apostle Paul. It's so exciting. We have a grouping about the ministry of the apostles and how they healed and how they preached and all the nice things they did, and then the rise of that great man, the Apostle Paul. And then right after that, we have all of Paul's teachings in almost uninterrupted order. And then finally, we tidy it all up with the last of the unicorns and the rainbows with the books that are mainly prophetic. You got the four Gospels. You got the teachings of the apostles, you got the rise of Paul, you've got Paul's teachings, and then you have the prophetic books. What they're trying to tell us is that's how it happened. The apostles wrote their books, Paul wrote his books, and then came the prophecy. That's what they're selling. It's very convenient. It's very neat. It's very tidy. That, however, is not what happened. It's not what happened. It's not even close. It's a convenient lie. The inconvenient truth, how the New Testament really unfolded, is quite a different story. It was not the four Gospels, three unicorns, the teachings of Paul, two unicorns, and then prophetic books with the final unicorn, all covered by a rainbow. That's not the way it was. The elephant dropping the dung is that the New Testament, the true historical chronology tells us this. James, who had been appointed leader of the apostles at the departure of Yeshua, was the first one to write. The book of James was the first book written of all the New Testament books. And it was written in 47 AD. The very first New Testament book was written about 15 years or so after Yeshua left. And it was the book of James. So the first book was the book of James. You with me? Then Paul, in response to the book of James, busted out five books in rapid succession, all within a five-year span where James and the other apostles were silent. James wrote James. Paul wrote the 2 Thessalonian letters, the 2 Corinthian letters, and the Galatian letters. So James wrote his epistle, then Paul wrote five books. Next, Mark wrote his gospel, and that's just 58 AD now. 2 years later, Peter wrote his first epistle, and then again, another rapid-fire response from Paul, four more books, Ephesians, Philippians, Colossians, and Philemon. So James wrote, Paul busts out five. Mark and Peter write, Paul busts out four or five more. Then comes the Gospel of Luke. You notice we haven't even got to the first book, quote-unquote Matthew. Then comes the Gospel of Luke and the book of Acts, which were originally a single volume, somewhere around 63 to 65 AD. And then again, Paul, 1st and 2nd Timothy, Titus, Hebrews. Do you see the pattern? The apostles write, Paul busts out a bunch of refutation. The apostles write, Paul busts out a bunch of refutation. The apostles write, Paul busts out a bunch of refutations. Folks, you may not like it. It may sound crazy. It may sound like, what the hell is this crazy nut talking about? Far from the neat, simple, and false narrative provided by our current New Testament, the real New Testament was clearly a back and forth exchange of ideas and philosophy between the original apostles of Yeshua and the apostle Paul. Now, this is a crazy analogy, but we talked about it earlier. It's like the David Duke and Apostle Duke. It's like the David Duke and Apostle Jones, the David Duke and Alex Jones thing. They were going back and forth. That's the way the New Testament was. It was a debate. It was a battle. It was a back and forth exchange of ideas and philosophies between the original apostles of Yeshua and the apostle Paul. It's clear that the current New Testament compilation was designed to keep us ignorant and unaware of this back and forth in the early years of the Christian church. And man, has it been successful. It wasn't until 2015 when some crazy long-haired ex-Pentecostal preacher decided to get on the internet and start doing some studying, that along comes the very first New Testament presented in its chronological order. And I can remember the day when I was sitting in my office, I forget where I was pastoring, and I thought, you know what? Why don't I read the books in their original chronological order so I can understand what was really going on? Worst mistake I ever made. Best thing I ever did. Worst mistake I ever made for my ministerial career. Best thing I ever did for being a person of integrity and reality and ending my life as a sellout piece of beep. And I read it in its chronological order, and I've never been the same again. Of course, I didn't have the guts to step out right away. I had a wife. I had three kids. They developed this really irritating habit of eating three times a day and needing a roof over their head. And I was a little bitch. There's no other way to put it. I was afraid. I was scared. And I didn't want to go out on the limb. I swallowed my integrity for a lot of years. And I'll never do it again. But the neat little narrative of our present New Testament is a convenient lie. It didn't happen that way. It's expressly, intently put together to keep us ignorant of how it really happened. And when we get back, we're going to start asking, why do they want to keep us ignorant of how it really happened? I'm Jeffrey Daugherty. You're listening to The Christian Whistleblower on IPBN. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
Today in school, I learned a lot. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes me. In English, I learned that I'm disgusting. And in physics, I learned that I'm a loser.
Today in school, in math, I learned that I'm ugly and useless. Trash. And in gym, in biology, I learned that I'm pathetic and, fat, and a joke. And stupid. In history, today in I learned that I'm trash.
Today in school, I learned that I have no friends.
In biology,
in English, I learned that I make people sick.
And,
gym, and at lunch, I learned that I sit on my own because I smell. In chemistry, I learned that no one likes
me. In biology, I learned that I'm fat and stupid.
In English,
and in math, I learned that I'm trash.
The only thing I didn't learn in school today.
The only thing I didn't learn today.
The only thing I didn't learn is why no one ever helps.
Kids witness bullying every day. They want to help, but they don't know how. Teach them how to stop bullying and be more than a bystander at stopbullying.gov. A message from the Ad Council.
We're here asking people from all over what they think of Lipton green tea. Let's hear what people from Texas have to say.
Mmm.
How about China?
Mmm.
Germany?
Mmm.
How about people from the North Pole?
Mmm.
Or Mars? What about mimes? Oh, right. People with their jaws wired shut?
Oh.
Yeah, a barbershop quartet.
Mmm.
Oh, you guys are great. How about race car drivers?
Mmm.
Yeah, what about you, high school glee club, here on a field trip?
Mmm.
Well, that settles it. It sounds like everyone loves the taste of Lipton green tea. With its protective antioxidants from real tea, it's not just good for you, it's mmm to you. Lipton tea can do that.
IPBN. IPBN.
The Intrepid Paradigm Broadcast Platform.
IPBN is an alternative radio network of elected programs and hosts hailing from varied schools of thought, academic and entertainment backgrounds, and traditional to esoteric beliefs. From science, history, archaeology, to spirituality, paranormal, politics, metaphysics, and so much more. You can also download the IPBN app at your iTunes and Android store by searching Intrepid Paradigm. And listen to 24/7 streaming on the IPBN Alternative Radio Network.
And now, back to the Edward Snowden of the New Testament, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty.
Thank you, Veronica. I am Jeffrey Daugherty, the Edward Snowden of the New Testament. Somebody said that not in a complimentary way, but I liked it so much that I just adopted it for my own. You know, it's interesting because Snowden, you know, he's not a guy that hates America. He's not a death to America guy. He's somebody that loves liberty from, you know, I don't know him, but from everything he said, he loves liberty. You know, he loves freedom. He doesn't think the government should be able to snoop on us. But think, how funny is it that the Ashley Madison hack happened? That is just awesome. And I see Josh Duggar, the Duggar bugger who was doing inappropriate stuff with his sisters and surfing Ashley Madison. And I guess he had at least one affair with a porn star while he was married, all the time in the leadership of the American Family Association or the Family Council or one of those crazy organizations. But thank God that happened. That's just hilarious to me. But Snowden doesn't hate America. And I don't hate Christian people. Now, I got to admit, I do hate Christianity. I hate the religion of Christianity. And Dr. Toltec hates it when I say this. But I hate the religion of Christianity because it's a guilt and fear-based control matrix which limits the ascension and the spiritual development of the people that it enslaves. You know, Dr. Toltec believes that it was used by the divine to help keep us from getting carried away into the astral realm before we were ready, and maybe it was, but I just can't see the silver lining on that cloud as much as Dr. Toltec tries to get me to see it. I just don't get it. I hate fear. I hate control, and I hate people using their intention to override other people's intention. I think that's the essence of black magic. Did you just say that you think Christianity is employing black magic? Yes, I did. Black magic is when you use your intention to override the intention of another person, and that's what Christianity is all about. And there you go. But I don't know where I was going with this. Oh, yeah, the whole whistleblower thing. Because I love the people that are enslaved by it. Because I love the people that are in bondage and fear and want to see them freed. And plus, it ticks me off because Yeshua came teaching a message that said, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. You can get back to the Father by following my ways, and you can have life and life more abundant. Now, I've talked about this in the past. I don't want to re-preach that whole thing or reteach that whole thing. But what Yeshua was saying, if you break down the original Greek, was he said, I'm the way. If you break down the original Greek, he said, I have brought you the best of all the ways of spirituality. And then he said, I'm the truth. Literally, I've brought you the best of all the truths of spirituality. And by following these ways and truths, you can get back to the divine and have a life that is abundant and even more abundant. That's what Yeshua came, showing us that we're not born in original sin, that we have the spark of divinity within, giving us the best of all the truths. And if you look at Yeshua's message, you'll see Hindu stuff in there. You'll see Buddhist stuff in there. You'll see Shinto stuff in there. You'll see teachings from India in there. You'll see American Indian wisdom in there. You'll see wisdom, I'm convinced, that comes from other worlds, maybe other universes in there. You'll see truths from virtually every other Babylon, Sumer. You'll see all those truths in the wisdom of Yeshua because it's a compilation of all the best stuff of humanity and this world, and I'm convinced probably beyond as well. And it's all about freedom. It's all about empowerment. It's all about personal development. And that rat bastard Paul co-opts that message and turns it into a guilt and fear-based control matrix that enslaves everybody, tells everybody, you don't have the spark of divinity in you. You're filled with original sin. I remember being in a debate with an apologist, a well-known Christian apologist who's been on Coast to Coast several times. And I have to say, the guy had the guts to actually debate me and talk about issues. He didn't just say I was ugly and my mom dressed me funny. His name's Chris Putnam. I mean, he deserves at least a mention for that because he did have the guts to actually have a debate and talk about issues. And that's, you can find it on my website, I think. It was about a two-hour-long debate. Very, very interesting and informative. I was way too nice, but I've watched Donald Trump now a few times, so I won't make that mistake again. But at any rate, that was one of the things. We don't have divinity in us. We're filled with sin. Man, how tragic it is that 2 billion Christians are convinced that they're filled with sin. And man, that wrecks people. That wrecks people. I mean, when you've got to get somebody out of the idea that they're a piece of crap before they can even begin to learn about the... Oh, man, it's so bad when you've got to unlearn a bunch of error before you can even begin to pick up truth. Truth is enough of a work in its own right without having to unlearn error. But anyway, that's where we are, and that's what we're doing, and that's what it's all about. That's the end game. Why does Darty do what he does? Because he wants to restore the message of Yeshua that we're born with the spark of divinity within, and that the ways, the truth, and the life will lead us back to the divine and give us an abundant life on the way. I want to see that crush the fear and guilt-based control matrix of Roman Catholicism and Roman Protestantism. And the way this all started, the Roman Catholicism, the Roman Protestantism, and the place that we find ourselves in today, is this New Testament lie, this NTLIE, that it was all one big happy family in first century Judea, and the Yeshua movement naturally morphed into Pauline Christianity, again, with unicorns and rainbows. That's what the compiler of the New Testament wants us to believe. But nothing could be farther from the truth. we've already seen just by looking at the books and how they're grouped without even looking at the contents that there was actually two competing messages. Messages that were wholly and completely incompatible, and messages that were openly competitive, if not completely combative, with one another. And an unbiased, objective look at the unfolding of the true chronological narrative shows us this plain as day. Look in a mirror or a reflective surface that's near you. It's as clear as that nose on your face. Just by looking at the pattern of the books, without even breaking down their contents, the historical record's clear. The apostles write, Paul fires off multiple responses, repeat. The apostles write, Paul fires off multiple responses, repeat. The apostles write, Paul fires off multiple responses, repeat. You get the idea. If you look at the unquestioned history, you've got James, followed by five epistles from Paul. Peter, followed by four epistles from Paul. Luke, followed by four more epistles from Paul. Only John's writings were not met by a Pauline barrage, and that's because the dude from Tarsus had already long fled Judea. He was gone. And where he was gone to, I'll throw this in for free if you haven't listened to me before. The historian Josephus shows that Paul wasn't crucified, wasn't martyred for his faith, but Paul lived out his life as late as 70 AD as a valet to Caesar in Rome, in the palace in Rome as late as 70 AD. You like apples? How about them apples? The true historical back and forth nature of the New Testament is easily discernible by simple observation. And the blatant revisionist work of Polycarp the compiler is also equally evident. The lie is completely undone when we take a look at the actual content of the books. If you have questions in the chat room, feel free to put them in capital letters and I will address them. You know, I see over there on the Twitter feed the NTLIE little meme there. I'm learning Photoshop, so I hope you like those. I said I'm learning. I'm not there yet, but you know what? It adds a little bit of a color and spice, so I hope that you like those anyway. But as we look at the book of James, and this is very, very important, we look at the things that James wrote, and we can begin to understand what was going on in the time that he wrote them and who he wrote them to and for and about. In James 1 and 8, it says, a double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And literally rendered, that means a double-souled man is unstable in all his paths. And if we look at the history, the Apostle James had been pleading privately with Saul of Tarsus for years, trying to bring him into the household of faith. He was repeatedly rebuffed by the man that was now even proclaiming himself the Apostle Paul. 177 times Paul's talked about in the New Testament. No one ever calls Paul an apostle but Paul, except in the book of Revelation, chapter 2, verse 2, when he's called a false apostle. But with no other options remaining to him, James finally was forced to call Saul out, to call Paul out in print. And when you read a double-souled man is unstable in all his paths, Paul was the epitome of double-souled. Beginning with his very name. Was he Saul? Was he Paul? Was he Paul? Was he Saul? Saul, Paul, Paul, Saul. Dude had two names. He was double-souled. Was he Saul? Was he Paul? The answer is yes. He was both. He was double-souled. And what escapes the casual reader is that Saul was his Jewish name. Paul was his Roman name. He was both Jewish and Roman at a time when there was virtually no Jews that were also Romans. There was no Romans that were also Jews. Not only did he have two names, he was Jewish and he was Roman. Double-souled. there's no way that the reader of these words in 47 AD would not immediately identify Saul Paul as the man being described. So you begin to already, from the eighth, think, dudes, this is the eighth verse written of the whole New Testament. A double-souled man is unstable in all his ways. Jewish, Roman, Saul, Paul, Pharisee, friend of Caesar, double-souled. And if that wasn't enough, James says, do not rich men oppress you and draw you before the judgment seats? The literal rendering has the definite article, and it really reads, is not the rich man overpowering you and treating you harshly? Is he not dragging you before the magistrates? Subtle mistranslation of this passage has prevented us from understanding its true meaning for 2,000 years. James is talking about a particular rich man, not rich men in general. James was calling out a particular rich man, one that was dragging believers before the legal authorities and afflicting them with punishments. Saul, Paul, was a guy of tremendous wealth. His family was from Tarsus, which was a textile center of the Roman Empire. His family was one of the leading tent providers to the Roman army. Saul was really like Dick Cheney. He was the heir to the Halliburton of his day. Saul was the rich man James was referring to. Paul was the rich man James was referring to. And the readers in AD 47 would have certainly known this. And if they didn't know it just from that, remember what James also said. Who is the person that was overpowering and treating you harshly, dragging you before the magistrates? Who in 47 AD would these believers, these readers, have identified as a man oppressing them, treating them harshly, hauling them before the judges and the authorities? Well, there's a little verse in Acts, Acts chapter 8, verse number 3. And it says, Saul made havoc of the church, entering into houses, hauling men and women into prisons and before the magistrates. It doesn't get any more clear than that, folks. Doesn't get any clearer than that. You know, I've been writing a lot, and I always want to say more clear, but my spell check always wants to change it to clearer, so I don't know which one's right. But it can't get any more clear or clearer. Paul literally fulfilled this verse by hunting down followers of the Yeshua movement and throwing them into prison, dragging them before the magistrates and having them committed to prison. The readers of James' epistle knew exactly who it was. They knew exactly who the rich guy was that was dragging them off to jails. James says, a rich guy is dragging you off to jail. And they're living in a day when a rich guy is dragging you off to jail. It's like James wrote and said, a rich guy is running for president and insulting everyone. How hard is it to identify that person? It was just that easy to identify Paul as the man that James was talking about. Also consider these words from Yeshua himself, prophetic words. They shall lay their hands on you and persecute you. They'll deliver you up to the synagogues and into prisons, and will drag you before kings and rulers for my name's sake. Surely the readers in the middle of the first century would have recalled these words and instantly knew that it was Paul that was being referred to. It's as plain as any teaching in the New Testament. Let me give you a little bit more. Here's James again. Don't you know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whosoever, therefore, will be a friend of the world is the enemy of God. The King James Version does everything it can to keep you from understanding what this verse is saying. Here's what it says, literally rendered. Friendship with those involved in administering worldly affairs is by implication hostility towards and alienation from the divine. Whoever chooses to be a confidant, friend, or associate with those involved in administering worldly affairs is inherently hostile to the divine. Now, this should speak volumes to a lot of you looking for deliverance from Washington, D.C., or from wherever your state capital is. Folks, I'm here to tell you today, your deliverance is not coming from Washington, D.C., or London, or Mexico City, or the heads of any of your other countries. Your deliverance does not come from your government, and it won't come from your government. The best you can hope from your government is that they'll leave you alone. But I digress. James plainly states that friendship with the men who are administrators of worldly governments is evidence of his hostility towards the divine and actually leads to alienation from the divine. James also goes on to say that anyone who's a confidant, a friend, or an associate of governmental leaders is hostile towards the divine. Folks, Paul of Tarsus was a cousin of the king in Jerusalem, Herod. He was a friend, he was an associate, he was a confidant, he was family of the king. He was also clearly associated, closely associated with the high priest. Even Paul himself claimed to be a Pharisee among Pharisees. Paul was a friend of the Jewish governmental world. Everybody knew it. This is who James was calling out. Not only that, but Paul was a confidant of Caesar Nero himself. And those who won't admit that, even though there's ample historical evidence, have to at least admit that he had to be awfully damn well connected to the Roman government in order for Rome to grant him police powers to arrest, summarily convict, and execute prisoners within a Roman province. How else can you do that in a Roman province, which Judea was? The Jews didn't rule Judea, Rome did. And yet Paul was allowed to arrest, convict, and execute people in a Roman province. Who gave him the authority to do that? You lying, deceitful, hypocritical geniuses out there who want to say I'm wrong. Who gave him the right? I guarantee you this, my friend. If you're in the state of Florida, you can't get that authority without Rick Scott, the governor, or the chief of police somewhere in the place where you reside. You can't do that. You can't start your own FBI without the direct okay from Barack Obama or whoever's heading up his FBI and Justice Department these days since the last person got arrested. Was that a jab against Obama? Yes. But if you think everything's going to be fine when Obama gets out of office, then you don't understand the problem. The point is that Paul was super duper well connected with government, both Jewish and Roman. And James was pointing this out. But when James is buried as the 11th or 12th book in the New Testament, and not first, you don't read this and you don't start putting two and two together, and that's exactly why they've done what they've done. Are you starting to see it a little bit? Saul was the epitome. He was the member of the ruling family of Herod the king. He was closely associated with the high priest, and he was a friend and confidant, and later would become a valet of Nero himself. Paul was well connected. James clearly and emphatically called out Paul as a friend of the world, and then clearly showed that that made him an enemy of the divine. His readers in AD 47 understood exactly what he meant, and now people hearing this and reading this on August 26, 2015, should clearly see it as well. Here's the point where you got to decide. Down here in the South, we say you got to decide if you're a rabbit or a squirrel. You've got to decide where you're going to go, what you're going to do, who you're going to be. Here's the point where ignorance has come to an end and you're about to move into stupidity. Up till now, you can be forgiven. Up to now, we can pat you on your head and say, that's okay. Up till now, you have an excuse. It's like those signs, I don't know if they have them anymore, but it used to be at the mall, shoplifting, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Well, guess what? Ignorance here is also no excuse. Now you know the truth. And like Yeshua said, when you know the truth is supposed to set you free. But only if you turn the lock with the key. You can know truth and not be free because you won't turn the lock with the key. You'll just stay in your gilded cage. You're no longer ignorant. You're stupid. You're tragic. You're a sufferer of spiritual Stockholm syndrome. Stockholm syndrome is when someone that's been held captive so long, they begin to identify with their captors and will actually fight to defend their captors and fight against their own freedom. How many of you are doing that right now? Cussing me, yelling at me, screaming at me, firing me off nasty emails, which I hardly read anymore. You're fighting against your own freedom. You're in a cage. I'm trying to open the door. I've given you the key. I've told you it's like it's a combination lock. I've given you the combination, but you won't turn the dial and dial up your own freedom. And I won't do it for you. When I was an evangelist, I used to try to convince you. I used to use my powers of neuro-linguistic programming and my powers of speech and my powers of influence. I would try to use, I was a Christian. I was using black magic. I'd try to use my power of intention to override yours and get you to do things I wanted you to do. I don't do that anymore. I won't do that anymore. If you don't want to be free, I'm not going to force you to be free. If you don't want to turn the key in the lock and swing open the door and come into freedom, I'm not going to open the door, drag you by the hair or by your ear like my nanny used to do me, and drag you kicking and screaming into freedom. I'm not going to do it. If you want to stay in your cage, then you can stay in your cage. It's up to you. I'm showing you the objective facts. I'm showing you where the lock is. I'm putting the key in the lock. But you have to decide to turn it. And if you don't turn it, you will stay captive until you decide to turn it. It's up to you how many more cycles you want to go through. Because the divine has all the time in the world. And so do you. But it all matters and it all depends upon whether you want to raise your level of consciousness, whether you want to become who you're supposed to be now, or if you want to wait. And some people think that by waiting, you may lose your chance because things are going to happen that will make it much more difficult for you to ascend to your fullness. We're not talking about that today. But when we look at the first book of the New Testament and its historical proper focus, we can plainly see that the book of James, the first book in the New Testament, was written specifically to identify Paul as a man of double names, Paul, Saul, a man of double Roman and Jewish souls, and therefore, in the estimation of James, untrustworthy. It was also written to show him as a rich man who was persecuting believers in fulfillment of prophecies by Yeshua, and therefore untrustworthy. And it was written to show him as both a friend of Jewish and Roman governmental leaders, one openly hostile towards and an enemy of the divine. You see what happens when you read things in historical context and not in the convoluted, dung-coated ludicrosity of the modern New Testament? It's up to you, folks. Diamonds or dung. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, the Christian Whistleblower. We'll be back after this.
IPBN is an alternative radio network of eclectic programs and hosts hailing from varied schools of thought, academic and entertainment backgrounds, and traditional to esoteric beliefs. From science, history, archaeology, to spirituality, paranormal, politics, metaphysics, and so much more. You can also download the IPBN app at your iTunes and Android store by searching Intrepid Paradigm. And listen to 24/7 streaming on the IPBN Alternative Radio Network. For more information and to listen to past shows, go to www.ipbn-fm.
Egypt, the cradle of civilization, land of the ancient pharaohs, where the living and the dead dwell side by side, and home to Gebel El Silsila. Beautifully situated in Upper Egypt amongst the bulrushes of the iconic River Nile and the ever-advancing sands of the evocative Western Saharan Desert, lays undisturbed 75 million years of Egypt's vast history until now. That is, when one thinks of Egypt, one automatically visualizes pyramids, sphinxes, the massive sprawling temples and shrines, the beautifully preserved tombs of kings and queens, and not forgetting the glorious treasure of the boy king, Pharaoh Tutankhamun. Yet very few have ever heard of Gebel El Silsila, a vast complex of sandstone quarries, ancient monuments, tombs, stelae, and now even temples, rock art, and workmen villages, not forgetting Roman roads, bridges, and fort, all associated with the quarrying of sandstone for the past 3,500 or more years. Now, Friends of Silsila brings all this and more to you directly from this ancient, wondrous site, with yet more secrets to be discovered by the team. But we need your help. There is so much work to accomplish that there's more than our lifetime's worth. Why not be part of that legacy? Immortalize yourself. Become the next Lord Carnarvon. Invest in the future. Be part of the discovery and the adventure. Why not come and participate as a volunteer? The Friends of Silsila requires ongoing funding from a wide range of sources, and there are many ways that you can donate to help ensure the continued archaeological work, guardianship, care, and preservation of this ancient historic site for future generations. We need your help, so come and join us today at www.friendsofsilsila.com, S-I-L-S-I-L-A, friendsofsilsila.com, and be part of the history. And be sure to look up Friends of Silsila on Facebook to join our group page. Friends of Silsila is a registered Swedish charity, and every penny it receives goes directly to the ongoing work at Gebel El Silsila.
And now, back to the Edward Snowden of the New Testament, the Christian whistleblower, Jeffrey Daugherty.
You know, folks, sometimes if you can't run with the big dogs, it's best to just stay on the porch. And only you know if you can run with the big dogs. So if you can't run with the big dogs, that's okay. Stay on the porch and just watch while we get it done. And we are getting it done wall to wall and treetop tall here on the Christian Whistleblower. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty, coming to you from Orlando, Florida, bringing out some good stuff for you to consider. So James writes the first book of the New Testament, and it's clearly identifying Paul as double-minded, unstable, a rich guy who's persecuting the people and a guy who's a friend of the government. And you know what? This just hit me. This could be very well applied to the churches of today. Roman Protestant, Roman Catholic, Jewish. I don't know about Islam because I'm just ignorant of Islam, but Roman Catholics, Roman Protestants, I mean, it's very easy for us to look and see that our spiritual leaders are double-souled. They say, oh, we're just for the people, but they live in multi-million-dollar houses. Oh, we're just for the people, and they live in these billion-dollar churches while the homeless starve to death outside of them. They say one thing, they mean another. They're double-souled, just like Paul was. It's like Yeshua said, you do the work of your father, you have your daddy, the devil. They're of their daddy, the devil. They're of Paul. They're just like Paul. They're double-souled, just like he was. They're rich. They're in bed with the government. They stand by while the government puts people in jail and then has paid prisons that make money when people get put in them. Holy crap, that's a bad idea. How would you like to be the next unpopular sector of society that gets thrown into a for-profit prison? Man, that's a bad idea. I can't believe we go along with it. And then friends of the government? How many of your big-time preachers aren't friends with the government? Think about that next time you see Joel Osteen praying with President Obama. Think about that next time you see Kenneth Copeland meeting up with the Pope, who's the head of his own state. James was identifying Paul as a double-souled man, rich guy persecuting the people in bed with the government. But today, we need to at least have the guts to see that James was talking about Paul, and we really ought to have the guts to realize that the same thing is being done by the sons and daughters of their daddy, Paul, the devil, the adversary, as it was in the first century. Same game, different names. So clearly, Paul was ticked off by this letter written by James. And think about it, dudes. It was written by an apostle, not only an apostle, but the apostle that Yeshua left in charge when he left. So here's the dude that was appointed by the dude, and this dude is saying bad things about you. Dude, that's bad. That's a bad situation. So Paul has to say, he has to do something, man. He's got to respond. And so Paul responds almost immediately with 1 and 2 Thessalonians. And Paul, and you know, I don't plan these things, but these segues just sometimes come up, or these things lead one into the other. And, you know, you go back to thinking about government, and when things are happening that are exposing bad stuff in government, so often the government will come up with a diversionary story or a diversionary tactic to take people's minds away from what's really going on, so much so that really the smart people in the world today, and if you listen to some of the programs on this network, like EBN with Rocky Stucci, if you listen to The Situation Room, and if you listen to the Bugle Call that was playing right before this show and many other shows, you realize that the really smart people not only look at the main stories, but they look around the main stories and find out what's really going on, that the main story was created to create a deception to cover up. So Josh Duggar gets busted for Ashley Madison. What's really going on that they don't want us to know about? Donald Trump throws out a Univision reporter. What do they really not want us to know about? Or they're talking about Donald Trump. What do they really not want us to know about? Hillary Clinton's email server. That's a big story. But What's the real story behind the story? That's what the real smart people are asking. And that's why, I mean, IPBN is a great place to listen to, because it's telling you not only the real stuff, but the stuff behind the stuff. Anyways, Paul wastes no time in responding to the lambasting he just took at the hands of James. And not only does he take aim at the apostle himself, but the movement that James was leading and the man that founded it, Yeshua of Nazareth. And not only that, he also creates a huge diversion. Now, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, you read these things and you've read them and you've never really put them together. And you've never put them together because they've been pulled completely out of context. 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, you know, is the second and third books of the New Testament right after the book of James. But 1st and 2nd Thessalonians in your New Testament that you're used to are tucked way down in being 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. They're like 13 and 14. Do you see what's going on? Number one was James. And James is buried way down in the current New Testament, almost to the end, and it was really the first. 1st and 2nd Thessalonians are way down about half when they were really 2nd and 3rd, because they're trying to pervert the narrative. They're trying to keep us from seeing, and have kept us for 2,000 years from seeing, dude, James wrote to bust out Paul for being a bad guy. And then Paul writes, and in context, when he says things like, for they shall say peace and safety, but sudden destruction's coming upon them, and they're not going to escape. Oh, well, that's clearly about the end times after the red heifer and the rebuilt temple and the Urim and the Thummim, and Indiana Jones finds the Ark of the Covenant. You think, oh, Jeff, you're being ridiculous. Well, it's all ridiculous. What Paul was saying, and oh, man, we have so much to talk about, and this is just good stuff. What Paul was saying was, when they preach peace and secure certainty, here's the thing that we have to ask. Who's they and what are they preaching? Paul says they are preaching peace. Who are they? Let's dig a little bit, shall we? Was there somebody in the first century that could have said to be preaching a message of peace? Is there somebody that was preaching peace? Is there somebody that said, my peace I leave with you, peace I give to you? Could there have been someone they called the Prince of Peace or something like that? Is that possible? Paul says they're preaching peace. Who are they? Who was it that was preaching a message of peace, security, and certainty in the first century? Can you think of anyone? The original readers of these documents certainly could. They knew exactly who Paul was talking about. There was a guy named Yeshua who said, peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. Not as the world gives do I give to you, but my peace. Don't let your heart be troubled. Don't let it be fearful. Jesus said, I give you my peace so that you can have, and I'm giving you the original Greek, so that you can have the certainty of security. I'm giving you my peace so you can have the certainty of security. And Paul said, these people that are preaching peace and certainty of security, Paul was quoting Yeshua. And he was quoting the apostles that were preaching the message of Yeshua. Do you get that? The they is the apostles. The they is Yeshua. They were preaching peace and certain security. The readers knew exactly who Paul was talking about. The first sentence of the verse is that Yeshua and his apostles were preaching peace. The second sentence is that they were preaching security and certainty. Yeshua said he preached both. And people that do appropriate the peace of Yeshua can rest in security and certainty. They don't have to be troubled. They don't have to live in fear. I'll say it again. Yeshua and his apostles were the one preaching peace and security, and Paul intentionally sets himself in opposition to them. Another verse for you, just in case you aren't convinced yet. Yeshua, these things I have spoken to you, that you might have peace and security. Dudes, what more do I have to do? Paul said, these people that preach peace and security. Jesus says, Yeshua said, I'm giving you peace and security. Paul is putting himself in opposition to the Yeshua movement. Paul emphatically states he is against Yeshua and those that preach his message. Do you see it? For they that come preaching peace and safety. Paul's talking about Yeshua and the Yeshua movement, the followers of the Yeshua movement. And he's saying this about 50 AD, maybe a little later, between 50 and 60 AD. And he says, these dudes preaching peace and safety, which are clearly the true apostles of Yeshua, he says, these dudes preaching peace and safety, I got news for you, brother. Sudden destruction's coming upon these bitches, and they won't escape. I probably shouldn't have said that. These apostles and their peace and security message, sudden destruction's coming upon them. They're not going to escape. He said this somewhere between 50 and 60 A.D. Think about that. He said that somewhere between 50 and 60 A.D., sudden destruction is going to come upon them and they will not escape it. The them is the they that are preaching peace and security, which are the 12 apostles of Yeshua and their followers. He's talking about what we would call the New Testament church. Paul wrote these words somewhere between 50 and 60 AD. I'm building to something. Paul was a Roman citizen. Paul was a friend of Caesar Nero. Paul's family made tents for the Roman army. Paul in 50 or 60 AD says destruction's coming upon the Yeshua movement. The Yeshua movement was almost solely in Jerusalem. That was their headquarters. That was where most of their followers were, Jerusalem. Could it be that the sudden destruction that Paul promised was coming on them, the sudden destruction that Paul promised they would not escape, it happened less than 10 years after Paul wrote these words? The Roman army marched into Judea, surrounded Jerusalem, and burned it to the ground. And literally, the people that preached peace and security, the Yeshua movement, all but died in the flames because that's where most of them lived. They were destroyed. They were almost wiped out. Inside information from the palace itself in Rome. Inside information from his family that made tents for the Roman army had given the Roman citizen knowledge of the upcoming destruction of Jerusalem. Paul knew the destruction of Jerusalem was coming. He knew the base of the Yeshua movement would be destroyed along with the city. And he boasted of it. These people that say peace and safety, sudden destruction's coming upon them and they will not escape. He wrote that arguably less than 10 years before Jerusalem was destroyed by the Roman army. What do you think about that? What do you think about that? If Paul knew, why didn't he warn the people in Jerusalem. 1 million people died, according to Josephus. It seems like Paul not only knew they were going to die, but Paul knew that this was his perfect chance to have his competition destroyed. He wanted the competing message to die in the flames of the city. This gives us some really dramatic insight into the intensity of the rivalry between the original Yeshua movement and Pauline Christianity. Think about that, folks. What does that make Paul if he knew the destruction of Jerusalem was coming? He boasted that they were going to be wiped off the map, and he didn't tell them about it in clear terms. He let them die. He let them die. I don't know why, but it reminds me of the Star Trek movie. Which one was it? It was the one. It was Undiscovered Country, where they're in the council and the Klingon moon is just destroyed. The Klingon Empire is dying. And Spock is trying to get Captain Kirk to want to help save the Klingons. And Spock says to him, "But Jim, they're dying." And Captain Kirk says, "Let them die." Paul said, "Let them die. Let them die, let them burn." It goes back to something Jimmy Swaggart told me one time years ago. "Jeff, there's two ways to have the biggest church in town. One is to build the best and brightest church so most people want to come to it. The other one is to burn everybody else's to the ground." Paul lacked the integrity of Jimmy Swaggart. That's a statement. That's a mouthful. You see what happens when you read the New Testament in its chronological order? And do you see why they've done everything they can to keep us from reading the New Testament in its chronological order? And then Paul went on to say this. He said, "Withdraw yourself from every brother that walketh disorderly." This King James English, man, is just brutal. "Withdraw yourselves from every brother that walks disorderly and not after the tradition which he received of us." Paul couldn't have been any more emphatic and clear. He's saying, listen, bros, do not hang out with those that smoke, drink, or chew. Do not hang out with those that do things that we don't do. Withdraw yourselves from those that don't believe what we believe. Withdraw yourself from those that don't follow the teachings that we followed. And specifically, don't hang out with those that don't believe the things I told you. That's what Paul said. There were clearly two camps in the early church competing for the hearts and minds of men and women. It's now beyond question. And Paul drew the line in the sand. He said, don't hang out with the people that don't follow what we have taught you. And if any man doesn't obey our words, note that man and have no company with him. Paul said this. And the followers of Paul are still saying this today. We don't smoke, drink, or chew, or hang out with those that do. It's us four and no more. It's like the old joke, the guy dies and goes to heaven. He's greeted at the pearly gates by St. Peter, of course, and he says, "Hey, let me give you a tour." And so he's walking around, and the guy says, "Well, who are those people there?" He says, "Oh, well, those are the Catholics." "Oh, okay." They walk a little bit further. He says, "Who are those people?" "Those are the Baptists." And then the guy sees a group way off in the distance. He says, "And who are those people way over there?" And the angel says, "Shh, be quiet. Those are the Pentecostals. They think they're the only ones here." And that's the way it is. And of course, I picked on the Pentecostals because I used to be one. But we know from his own words now that Paul viewed the apostles and the Yeshua movement as his enemies and as his competitors. There's absolutely no doubt in any objective mind that this verse speaks about those following the doctrines of the apostles and not those of Paul. He tells his followers, don't listen to the apostles, commands them to avoid them. Paul told his followers to ostracize the followers of the original Yeshua movement. Folks, do you see what's going on? Are you beginning to understand the NTLIE? The New Testament's not a single book written by one author. It's a compilation of 27 books. And the order has been completely jacked. It's been completely jacked because when you keep things in order, you understand the development of thought and doctrine. They jacked it because they don't want you to understand the development of thought and doctrine. They've done it because they're trying to create a false paradigm. They've actually rewritten history. They've actually put us on another timeline. The winners have rewritten history. They've created another timeline. They've told us about, remember the rainbows and the unicorns? The four gospels, the teachings of the apostles, the teachings of Paul, and the prophetic books. Very neat and tidy, clean and simple, rainbows, unicorns, and glitter. But the real New Testament was a bunch of dudes battling each other for the hearts and minds of men and women. The true chronology tells us that the apostles were writing, and Paul was giving it back to him. And then the apostles would write, and Paul would give it back to him. And then the apostles would write, and Paul would give it back to him. And you know what? It was mano a mano. You got to at least give him that. Paul at least had the gumption to stand up and butt heads with him because he didn't believe him. Of course, he was a rat bastard, but it was a real fight. And you can somehow respect a real fight. But these guys we have today, they don't even have the integrity of having a real fight. They won't face you man to man. They'll just stick a knife in your back when you're not looking. They try to create this neat, simple, and false narrative in the New Testament. They have created it. But the reality is that the New Testament was a back and forth of ideas and philosophy between the original apostles of Yeshua and the apostle Paul. And that the NTLIE, the New Testament lie, has been specifically designed to keep us unaware of this back and forth and to keep us unaware of the battle between the two parties and of the reality that James called out Paul. Paul answered back and said, listen, you guys are going to burn. And within 10 years, they did burn. Paul burned every other church to the ground. His was the last one standing. Paul was the winner. And we all know that winners write history. And the New Testament, in its current iteration, in its current form, is testament, pardon the pun, that winners write history. Paul was the winner. His Roman allies destroyed his competition. And Paul has been riding the wave and writing the history ever since. But that's over now, my friends. Because there was a few people that survived the conflagration in Jerusalem. There was a few people that survived the fire and lived to continue to tell the story and laid down their lives and laid down their best efforts to tell the truth and let it continue to be known. And that's the tale that we continue to tell today. And we will continue to tell as long as we have breath, as long as we have life. We will not be silenced. We got nothing to lose. And we are dangerous. I'm Jeffrey Daugherty. the Christian Whistleblower. And until next week, I'm reminding you, I'm urging you, unindoctrinate yourself.
Stay connected with the Christian Whistleblower at www.christianwhistleblower.com. On Facebook, follow Jeffrey Darty and Jeffrey Darty Show. And on Twitter, at NC Kabbalah. Visit ChristianWhistleblower.com today to learn how to create yourself and to live the life you'll love.